Ebola could solve America's problems with atheism, homosexuality, sexual promiscuity, pornography, and abortion.
To you, who claims your words are from God, but whose book is pledged to King James, you've been lying about my people for too long.
There are reasons why lesbians remain friends with their exes. At the same time, if a relationship is especially toxic, it is appropriate to end the relationship completely.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Uganda lawmakers look to resurrect the anti-homosexuality law, a homophobic trio trumpets queer caused crises, and wise lesbians leave their U-Haul behind. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Gary Shaw.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending August 9th, 2014. Uganda tops the news again this week. Responses to the Constitutional Court ruling on August 1st that overturned the country's draconian anti-homosexuality law have come swiftly. The court decision did not strike a blow for LGBT equality, however. It simply overturned the law on a legal technicality, determining that Speaker Rebecca Kadaga had acted improperly by allowing the anti-homosexuality law to pass without a quorum, the minimum number of lawmakers that need to be present for a vote. The measure calls for up to life in prison for private consensual adult same-gender sex, outlaws advocacy for LGBT rights, and requires citizens to report suspected homosexuals to the police. At last report, 165 members of parliament had signed on to a petition calling for the quick reinstatement of the law. Equality activists have warned that pressure from religious leaders and the public, which overwhelmingly supports it, could prompt parliament to act soon. Those MPs believe they can pass a waiver to reduce the number of days required to pass a law. It would normally take at least 45, but the waiver must first be signed by President Yoweri Museveni, who took almost 2 months to sign the Anti-Homosexuality Act into law after it passed in December last year. Museveni could choose to delay a full parliamentary vote on the bill reinstating the law by forcing it to first be considered by the chamber's finance committee. And as expected, Uganda Attorney General Peter Nyambi has filed an appeal of the Constitutional Court ruling with the country's Supreme Court. The law's chief sponsor, MP David Bahati, has close ties with right-wing U.S. evangelicals. He insisted this week that homosexuality is not a human right here in Uganda.
BuzzFeed reported this week that the Ugandan government has also signed a one-year, $600,000 contract with the Washington, D.C.-based consulting firm Mercury to help with the country's public relations problems in the U.S. The contract was finalized a few weeks before President Museveni visited Washington for the U.S.-African Leaders Summit convened by the White House in early August. Leaders of other African countries with harsh laws criminalizing LGBT people also attended, including Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh, and Cameroonian President Paul Biya. Several human rights activists criticized U.S. President Barack Obama for not raising the issue of LGBT rights, or at least not doing so publicly, during the summit. Even without the anti-homosexuality law, same-gender sex is still illegal in Uganda. Existing statutes punish convictions with lengthy jail terms.
Defying the hostility that surrounds them, but after organizers got permission from police officials, about 100 courageous Ugandans attended a peaceful, invitation-only LGBT pride party on a beach in Entebbe on August 9th. There was no police presence, but there were also no counter-protesters. With music, dancing, and laughter, activists gathered in a park on the shores of Lake Victoria, close to the country's presidential palace. Some wore masks to conceal their identities, but at least one celebrant had a sticker pasted to the side of his face that read, "Some Ugandans are gay. Get over it."
Elsewhere, about 300 people decorated their bicycles and motor scooters with rainbow flags and banners and took to the streets of Hanoi on August 4th for Vietnam's third annual LGBT Pride Festival. Demonstrations of any kind in the country are highly controlled by the government. But for the third consecutive year, there was no official interference, and the wheel-driven procession drew a record-breaking number of participants. While same-gender sex is not illegal in the country, it's generally a not-to-be-discussed social taboo. There was a strong focus on family at this year's Pride Festival, which had the theme Together. Mothers from Vietnam's PFLAG, an acronym for Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, gathered for a forum on how families can come to embrace their LGBT children. The Vietnamese government recently backed away from plans to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples, though holding a symbolic but non-legally binding same-gender wedding ceremony has not been against the law since September of last year. Polling has found that about 1 in 3 Vietnamese people support marriage equality. Vietnam could also be getting its first married, openly gay U.S. ambassador. President Obama nominated Ted Osius to the post in May. Osius has a young son with his husband Clayton Bond, who's also a career Foreign Service officer.
Two boats carrying white-clad colleagues of AIDS activists and researchers who were killed when Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 was shot down over Ukraine marked a somber start to the traditionally flamboyant Amsterdam Pride flotilla on August 2nd. Six of the dead were on their way to Melbourne, Australia, for an annual international AIDS conference. 193 Dutch citizens were among the 298 people killed in the crash. Hundreds of thousands of locals and tourists lined the city's historic canals to applaud the boats as they passed, 15 minutes before dozens of festively decorated party boats kicked off the annual aquatic procession. Meanwhile, at least 25 mostly African delegates to the AIDS conference in Melbourne reportedly failed to board their flights home after the conference closed and are seeking asylum in Australia.
In other news, a 3-judge panel of the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, based in Cincinnati, Ohio, heard 6 consolidated marriage equality cases from 4 states, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee, on August 6th. One of the 3 judges is an outspoken liberal, and another is a well-known conservative. So the swing vote appears to be that of Judge Jeffrey S. Sutton, an appointee of President George W. Bush and former law clerk for the ultra-conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Early in the proceeding, Sutton interrupted an attorney from Michigan who was arguing that the state has an interest in fostering heterosexual marriage for the good of children. Maybe originally marriage was about procreation, Sutton said, but today it's really about love, affection, and commitment. However, he later worried about courts overruling popular votes. Sutton asked an attorney fighting Michigan's marriage ban, "Don't you think you're more likely to change hearts and minds using the democratic process?" The court heard the Michigan case first, followed by 2 Ohio cases, then 2 Kentucky cases, and finally the Tennessee case. Rulings are not expected to be announced for at least a few weeks.
The Sixth Circuit is the 3rd federal appeals court this year to hear challenges to lower court decisions declaring state bans on civil marriage for same-gender couples unconstitutional. 3-judge panels of 2 other circuits, the 4th in Richmond, Virginia, and the 10th in Denver, Colorado, each ruled 2-1 earlier this year that last year's U.S. Supreme Court Windsor ruling striking down a law that had banned the federal government from recognizing legally married same-gender couples opened the door to state civil marriage equality. The 4th Circuit specifically overturned Virginia's ban, but the decision also impacted the states of North Carolina, South Carolina, and West Virginia, over which the court has jurisdiction. Maryland, which is also covered by 4th Circuit rulings, has already enacted marriage equality. The 10th Circuit ruling struck down the bans in Oklahoma and Utah, but similarly affects bans in Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, and Wyoming. Officials in Virginia are appealing the 4th Circuit ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the states of Oklahoma and Utah are filing similar challenges to the 10th Circuit decision. The justices, however, are not required to hear any appeals. Unless there is at least one conflicting appeals court ruling, some analysts say the High Court may simply let state marriage equality bans be overturned in all 11 federal circuits, which could still take years. If you want to mark your calendar, the 7th Circuit in Chicago is scheduled to hear arguments on civil marriage equality bans in Wisconsin and Indiana on August 26th, and the 9th Circuit in San Francisco is set to review Idaho's and Nevada's bans on September 8th.
There have now been rulings by 4 county judges in Florida striking down the ban on civil marriage equality in that state. A Florida Keys Circuit Court judge issued the first salvo on July 17th. A Miami-Dade County judge overturned the ban on July 26th. A Broward County judge then ruled the ban unconstitutional on August 4th, and a Palm Beach County judge followed suit the following day. Florida's Republican Attorney General Pam Bondi has already appealed the first 2 rulings, thus preventing any same-gender couple in Florida from legally marrying. She issued a statement late this week asking that no further marriage equality rulings be handed down in the state, arguing that the U.S. Supreme Court must ultimately decide the matter.
And finally, according to a story on the UK's LGBT Pink News website, the Russian creators of a Truth or Dare-style card game, labeled as suitable for players age 12 and up, have been fined for promoting non-traditional sexual relations to minors, a violation of the controversial national law signed last year by Russian strongman Vladimir Putin. Some of the cards apparently dared players to pretend to be in a relationship with an action figure or with another player. A so-called expert psychologist testified that the game would have a negative effect on the psychosexual personality development of children. Its creators were fined 45,000 rubles, equivalent to about 742 British pounds, or a little more than 1,230 US dollars. The game has also been yanked from toy store shelves. Pink News also reported on a toy pencil sharpener that mocks President Putin, with a likeness of his head at one end and an opening in the rear for pencils to be inserted.
That's NewsWrap for the week ending August 9th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Gary Shaw.
Healing for the Bible-battered brain and the trauma of toxic trysts, later in the program. As the world watches the spread of violent conflict and humanitarian crises with deepening concern, Right Wing Watch exposed three more cheerleaders for the apocalypse who believe that all geopolitics revolve around homosexuality. Southern Baptist Tea Party pastor Rick Scarborough warned his Florida congregation to be on the lookout for creeping ambassadors.
You are the watchman. I am the watchman. We may not can save America. Every day I'm amazed that we live another day, that God gives us grace. This thing could all come crashing down, either economically or with a series of dirty bombs going off in our major cities, or one major nuclear bomb that would destroy half the country and contaminate the rest. And if that happens, God is perfectly just and vindicated, because we have squandered our grace in this country. You want to know why the Arab world calls us the great Satan? In a June 23rd speech to a group of foreign affairs officers, Secretary Kerry proudly acknowledged there are now five openly professing homosexual U.S. ambassadors, with a sixth on his way to Vietnam. How far we have fallen. When will pastors and when will Christians stand up and say enough is enough?
Rick Scarborough says that enough is enough, but according to Mission America radio host Linda Harvey, enough LGBT people to have that much impact must not be very many.
The truth never stopped homosexual activists from claiming the 10% figure, however, as shown in the title of a book by Kevin Jennings, the notorious founder of GLSEN, a book called One Teacher in Ten. Another book from over a decade ago was aimed at homosexuality and teens and was called Two Teenagers in 20. These attempts to normalize sinful behavior have been discounted over and over, and we need to keep repeating the reality that relatively few people enter and remain in these lifestyles.
While Linda Harvey considers it all a matter of queer inflation, True News host Rick Wiles is setting his heart on some heavenly subtraction.
You know, this Ebola epidemic could become a global pandemic, and that's another name for plague. It may be the great attitude adjustment that I believe is coming. Ebola could solve America's problems with atheism, homosexuality, sexual promiscuity, pornography, and abortion. If Ebola becomes a global plague, you better make sure the blood of Jesus is upon you. You better make sure you've been marked by the angels so that you're protected by God. If not, you may be a candidate to meet the Grim Reaper.
On the other hand, religious right radio guy Rick Wiles had previously postulated that President Obama could use Ebola to strengthen his power in the U.S. You can just never tell about that gay agenda. But wait, a new brand of theology slams into trans queer poet J. Mays III for an antidote to homophobic religion.
When I was 11, Philly is my home, like, hands down, all that kind of stuff. When I was 11, though, I was living in a rural town in South Jersey. So when I was in this rural town in South Jersey, I didn't know what the word gay was, what trans was, what queer was, but I knew that for whatever I was dealing with in the world, I was going to hell. So I learned that pretty quickly. So this is a poem that I wrote pretty recently based on just some really great people in my life that I've gotten to meet over the years. And this is called Josephine.
Yes.
Let's go.
She asks if she can talk to me about Jesus at 3 a.m. on the C train, because something about my queer face means clearly I'm on a path straight to hell. I've come to expect this type of reaction from strangers at least once a week since the first time I was exercised at 16, but today I've grown tired and I've decided it is my turn to proselytize. So before you do any of that, I want to know from you, have you heard the good word about Joseph of Genesis? See, Joseph, Josephine, Joe of Genesis, favorite child of Jacob, aka Israel. When asked what she wanted, you desired one thing, a ketoneth passim. Pastor called this a royal coat, and Joe, I had never read the Bible before, found you and kept reading. Josephine, I got to 2 Samuel and realized your coat of many colors was a princess dress. Joseph, your father must have really loved you, because he got it for you, and you wore it with pride. Joe, when your brothers saw you in your flowing dress, in your glory, they became enraged. I am sorry for the beating you received. Sorry they destroyed your dress and smeared it with the red paint of your swollen veins. Josephine, did you know they told your father you were dead? So he never come looking for you. Never knew your brothers sold you as a slave into Egypt. And once you were stolen from your home fields, the earth dried up. Joe, the very ground on which you walked, mourned the loss of its genderqueer child, and all the plants died, and the animals no longer had the will to live. Josephine, your family nearly starved. Saw the formation of ribs where once there grew flesh and belly fat, and they, hungry and desperate, traveled into Egypt. And what must they have seen, Joe? See, in Egypt, people discovered you, not as a fag, not as tranny. They saw you in totality. You went from slave to leader over lands. There you were, Josephine, as you, as magnificent. And your family couldn't even recognize you through the glare of divinity. But you saw them, shivering in fear, waiting to hear what this regal leader might say, wondering if your spirit might see fit to grant them the grain needed to survive. And Joseph, love, broke through the darkness of resentment. And for the first time, your family saw you, as magnificent, for it was your word that saved them from starvation. Dear Joseph of Genesis, aka Josephine, aka Joe, I'm claiming your story for every queer kid told that we're unholy, for every queer told that in order to love we must let our faith die. I'm gonna put it in a pocket under my heart, next to Ruth and Naomi, next to David and Jonathan, next to Higgai and Deborah, and seek them at the last Passover with Jesus and Lazarus. Yes, I'm taking Jesus with me too, dear pastor. To you, who claims your words are from God, but whose book is pledged to King James, know what allegiances you keep. You've been lying about my people for too long.
Yeah. That was Josephine by trans queer poet J. Mays III.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out.
Every breath you take, every move you make, every bond you break, every step you take, I'll be watching you.
With all the books to help women dealing with difficult heterosexual relationships, now there's The Wise Lesbian Guide to Getting Free from Crazy-Making Relationships and Getting On With Your Life. Author Amber Ault explains the similarities and differences with Sandy Jonagold of WORT Madison, Wisconsin's Her Turn.
Tell me first, what are crazy-making relationships? How do you know if you're in one?
If you're asking yourself, am I going crazy? Probably you're in a crazy-making relationship. When I talk about crazy-making relationships in the book, I'm looking at relationships between same-sex or queer couples. These relationships are relationships in which at least one partner is often feeling that they can't be confident about their place in the relationship. They are uncertain sometimes what's real and not real. Their partner may be volatile. Their partner may be absent. Their partner may be very self-centered. And so they often feel simply disoriented and uncomfortable. One of the women I interviewed for this book, and I interviewed several, sometimes would make up professional conferences that she would tell her partner she was going to go to just so she could get away for a weekend, that she would go to a hotel and just rest, because every night when she came home, she was never sure who she was coming home to or what kind of treatment that she was going to get. So these crazy-making relationships are not necessarily physically violent relationships, but they are emotionally disturbing, disorienting, and ungrounding relationships.
Are there a lot of these relationships? What was the impetus for writing the book?
I think there are a lot of these relationships. There's a upsurge in publications about narcissists and sociopaths or antisocial people and people with borderline personality disorder. Most of those books are oriented toward people in opposite sex relationships, and they're heretofore hadn't existed any books, as far as I was aware, that were devoted to dynamics that are created by those personality disorders in same-sex relationships. So I wanted to write a book like that because when I found myself in such a toxic relationship a few years ago, I went looking for a way of figuring it out. And the material that I found mostly focused on heterosexual or opposite-sex relationships. So partly I wanted to write the book that I needed to find at the time that I needed it a few years ago, and this is the project that came out of that.
So you just met somebody and you're starting to have those feelings. They tell women in opposite-sex relationships, one of the ways that you can tell that you're getting involved with somebody that might not be a good person to get involved with is if that person wants to get involved too soon. Is that the same in these kind of relationships?
We all know the joke about what does a lesbian take to a third date? U-Haul. And as women with other women, we often tend to bond pretty quickly, and that's not necessarily a pathological thing, but the fact that that is a common thing often masks when it is a pathological thing. So early on, things that people need to look for are somebody who wants to move too quickly, somebody who wants to move in, somebody who comes for a date and stays a week, somebody who tells you they love you on the third date or asks you to marry them on the second date or the first week or the second month, maybe. So pacing is important. Someone who wants to control your time or appears overly jealous. Someone who plays on your sympathy. Now, this is a really important thing, because for both people who have sociopathic and narcissistic tendencies, we would think, oh, that person is going to show up as somebody who's particularly grandiose. But actually, in many instances, the person who is narcissistic or has antisocial tendencies will play on somebody's sympathy. And so we find ourselves wanting to protect them or wanting to caretake them early on in the relationship. This is not to say that over the course of a long haul in a healthy relationship, we don't care for our partners or take care of them. We certainly do. But within the first month or the first year, if we're moved to give a lot of money or move to rescue the person or have our heartstrings tugged a little, we can mistake that for affection or for love, when in fact a person with a personality disorder might be just assessing, how good a mark is the person that they're dating. So we have to watch out not only for some of these more classic signs, but also that sense of, this person is a great person. They're just in a hard place. I need to step up and then they'll be wonderful.
One of the other things that seems kind of unique to lesbian culture is the fact that people feel like they need to be friends with their ex. You talk very specifically in the book that you don't need to do that.
I think there are some things that folks in queer relationships can learn from the straight world, and that is that sometimes when a dating relationship doesn't work out, it's okay to simply say, this is not going to work for me, and move on. Now, there are reasons why lesbians remain friends with their exes. At the same time, if a relationship is especially toxic, it is appropriate to end the relationship completely. I don't want to completely pan the idea that one could be friendly with someone with whom one has had a romance that didn't work out. On the other hand, one of the difficulties people face in exiting, particularly from same-sex relationships that are toxic, is a lot of community pressure to continue to be friendly, to be nice, to not draw the line, to not set a firm boundary. And that then can make it difficult for a person to leave a relationship that's unhealthy or toxic.
You talk about how to get free in the book and spend a lot of time on that, but you also give some very good strategies about how to not get into these in the future and how to steer clear and how to get something that works much better. One of the sayings in the book that I want to take as a mantra is, ambiguity is the heart of drama and clarity is the heart of peace.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ambiguity is the heart of drama is an important understanding for people to have. And if you have that understanding going into relationships moving forward, you can pay attention to this question, is the person consistent? Or are they kind to me one day and unkind to me the next day? So this creates ambiguity. It also creates intermittent reinforcement because we have a tendency when we have a positive reward or a positive experience with someone and then the next experience we have with them is not so positive, we have a tendency to want to recapture that initial positive experience. So that often keeps people hooked into toxic relationships. So ambiguity, we can pay attention to the ambiguities that show up early in a dating relationship or a little later on and see whether those are setting up a dynamic that is going to be difficult to exit or that is toxic for us. And when we identify that, it's much easier to walk away from it as opposed to being hooked in by it. Again, clearing up ambiguities then helps us to be in relationships that are clear, peaceful, and happy.
Amber Ault, who is a psychotherapist and a sociologist, whose new book is A Wise Lesbian Guide to Getting Free from Crazy-Making Relationships. This is Sandy Janigold.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Gary Shaw, and Sandy Janigold contributed program material with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. Iris Judotter and Chris Williamson performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the kicking ass that's funded the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Log on to thiswayout.org for on-demand listening, program information, news from the crew, and links to our blog, Facebook, and Google Plus pages. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Arusha Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KOOP Austin, Texas, CJSF Burnaby, British Columbia, WCRS Columbus, Ohio, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.